So, our topic is the issue of Erech Hatzeros, involving Jews and non-Jews. This is going to end up being a topic that will run over from today over to Friday. But first of all, just because we have people here who have not been here for Erech Hatzeros in general, a five-second introduction to what we're talking about. Generally speaking, we're familiar with the idea that on Shabbos, one is allowed to transport between one private domain and another private domain. And from a Raisa standpoint, from a biblical perspective. However, we have a rule that states that in the event that I have a private domain and you have a private domain, and there's a joint yard that we have access to as well, as you actually just said, I'm not allowed to transport from my house into the yard, which we jointly own, even though everything is enclosed, there are walls around everything, and so on, unless we create a merger of our properties. And the merger of our properties is what we call an Eruv Chatzeros. Eruv meaning to merge things. Eruv Chatzeros is a merging of our yards. And there are two different reasons that are brought up in the Gemara. One reason that the Bavli brings is because we are concerned that if you don't do that, people will not recognize that this Chatzer is actually a Rishus Hayachid, is a private domain, and they might think that just like I'm able to carry out into this yard, I'm also able to carry out into the street. People get confused. Maybe Rishus Hayachid, Rishus Harabim, Chatzer Mavli, and so on. I'm not going to get into that discussion right now. That's one reason. The other reason brought in the Rishali is that when you create this joint meal, what you do is everybody, all of the residents, have to contribute food to this meal that is going to be everybody's meal and everybody has access to, and going into other people's houses to collect the food is actually going to cause shalom. It's going to cause peace, which I might have thought counterintuitive. I walk into everybody's houses and take food from them. That doesn't necessarily promote peace. Nonetheless, that's the Rishonim's view of what we're doing with this Eruv Chatzeros. So that's in a nutshell. So what we're going to see today is an issue of social engineering and concern about yards which have residents living off of them who are Jewish and residents who are not Jewish. And the question of who exactly participates in the Erev Chatzeros and what the requirements are. And we begin with the first source on the sheet that I gave out. Pesach, you have what I emailed you. I don't know if you have it on your... Good. So the first source is a mission in the beginning of the sixth parak in Erevin, and it says Hadarim Hanachmi B'Chatzer. Let's say you have one of these yards with multiple houses that open onto the yard, and there are Jewish residents, and there's also a non-Jewish resident. Or if one of the residents is a Jew who doesn't believe in Erevin, and I want to come back to that not today, but likely in Shir on Friday. Hareza Oser Olav Diver Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says you can't make an Erev with him. There is no such thing as creating an Erev Chatzeros with a non-Jewish resident. Even if he contributes food, you're going around the yard and collecting bread from everybody, and he says, I want to give you some also. And he says, look, I bought it in the supermarket, and it's all kosher and everything else. Nonetheless, there's no such thing as an Erev Chatzeros between Jews and non-Jews for reasons we have to discuss. Sorry, well, we'll see. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Omer la'olam eino oser adshu shnei Yisraelim osrin zalze. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, you're fine as long as there's only one Jew on the yard. Once there are multiple Jews living there, that's when you have a problem. So clearly we have to understand why the distinction between one Jew and multiple Jews, that's all part of our conversation. So in order to understand this, you have to actually begin one step back from that, which is that if you're dealing with a non-Jewish resident, in general, he shouldn't need to participate in the Erev Chatzeros at all. In other words, letter of the law, within this whole thing, which is itself a rabbinic institution, Erev Chatzeros is a derabbanan, really, it doesn't affect the residents of a non-Jew. So, letter of the law, what that means is, imagine that this is a joint yard right here, these two tables, and we are all residents on the yard, and let's say in the empty seat over there, that's a non-Jew's house. From a technical perspective, all of us Jews could contribute bread to create an Erev Chatzeros, or not just bread, it's Erev Chatzeros, so it doesn't have to be bread, but we all contribute for an Erev Chatzeros. He doesn't contribute, and we're fine. We can all carry around the yard on Shabbos. It doesn't make a difference, letter of the law. And that's a Tosefta in Erevin in source base. Chatzer shel goyim, harayikit yer shebehema. He says the yard on which, I should say, a non-Jew lives, we view his residence like any other building that is not a dwelling at all. It could be a pasture for all I care. It doesn't have to participate. Mutar l'hachnis l'hotzi mechatzah l'batei bat mechatzah. You can transport from your house into the yard into the house. Makes no difference. And kim shazu mechatzah mutar l'talton mechatzah. Whatever started Shabbos in the yard, you had the deck chairs or whatever that were out there in the yard. You can move them around the yard just fine on Shabbos. There's absolutely zero concern from the fact that there is a non-Jewish resident living there. New, so then what's going on? Why do we have our Mishnah? Why are you suddenly telling me that if there's a non-Jew on the yard, your Erev doesn't work? So that is the Gemara in Erev in Tzamach Bezim at Aleph source, Gimel. Yosef Abaye bar Oven, Rav Chilna bar Oven, Yosef Abaye Gabayu. Abaye bar Oven, Rav Chilna bar Oven, two Amoraim, sages from the Gemara's time, are sitting and discussing these issues. They're sitting in Beis Medrash, and Abaye is with them. But Yosef Ka'amri, and they said the following, they asked the question, Bishlam Rabbi Meir Kasavar Diras Nachvish Madira. I understand Rabbi Meir's position. Rabbi Meir believes that the non-Jews' residence does count, just like all the Jews' residences do count. Right? Loshna chad, loshna trei. I don't care how many Jews are living in the yard, it doesn't make a difference. He does count. And therefore, Rabbi Meir said in Source Aleph, in the Mishnah, that having a non-Jew there is going to disqualify your Eruv, because a non-Jew doesn't participate in the Eruv. Let's work with that as our assumption for now. And therefore, his residence wrecks the Eruv for everybody else. El Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Micah Suffer, but I don't get Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, who says that it's only an issue once you have two Jews. If you're telling me that non-Jews' residence counts, then even with one Jew you have a problem. And if his residence does not count, then even if you have two Jews living there, it doesn't make a difference. So Amar lo Abaye, Abaye says, I'll explain what's going on. He says, first of all, you misunderstood Rabbi Meir. V'sava Rabbi Meir diras nachri shma dira. You think the Rabbi Meir believes that the non-Jew's residence counts like all the other residences in terms of having to worry about Erev Chatzeros. V'atanya, I have a brisa, which I added in brackets, shows up further down the page on Tzamach Bezim et Aleph, in which Rabbi Meir is going to say the following. Chatzeros shal nachri harei hu kedir shal behema. He's going to say explicitly that the non-Jew's residence does not have the status of a residence such that it should require participation in Erev Chatzeros. Ela dekulei alma diras nachri lo shma dira. Rather, he says, everybody agrees that this residence does not count as far as we are concerned. He does not need to participate. In terms of the institution of Erev Chatzeros, if you have a yard with Jews and non-Jews living on it, the Jews can make an Erev Chatzeros, the non-Jews can look at them and think, wow, these strange Jews are doing some other weird ritual now, and everybody's good and you can carry on Shabbos. However, we have an additional decree involved. We have a problem of concern that when Jews live with non-Jews as part of one society, the Jews unfortunately tend to learn from the conduct of those around them. Right? And this is reality. Look at what happened when Jews were liberated from the ghetto, and the results of that in terms of their emancipation and their ability to participate in society. While participating in society comes with all sorts of benefits, nonetheless, it also comes with the fact that as you interact with non-Jewish neighbors, you meet them and you find out they're human beings just like us. Right? When people often speak about the problems of intermarriage and they can't understand why children why Jewish children want to go out and marry, I think the answer is fairly straightforward, because they go out and they meet their non-Jewish neighbors. They may be in school with them, they may be at work with them, they ride the subway with them, and they find out they're nice people too. They can be good, moral, ethical human beings. They can be attractive human beings. And they say, well, what's the difference? And if they don't understand why there's value in perpetuating a Jewish people, then of course they're going to go out and marry somebody else. It's a much broader pool to draw on. So so that's what the Gemara is saying. There's that's the Gemara's statement of concern. It is that if you have Jews and non-Jews with houses surrounding the yard, then the Jews are all going to learn from their non-Jewish neighbors. This is not about learning Chilul Shabbos. This isn't about you're going to come to violate Shabbos because they violate Shabbos. This is a much broader discussion of the influence of your neighbors. So Rabbi Eliezer, and both Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov and Rabbi Meir agree that this is a concern. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Savar came into Nachri Chashra Shvichus Damim trade the Shrichin Adari Gazu Behu Chalo Shechlo Gazu Berabanan. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, a Tana, living under the Romans, says Jews are not really likely to go set up shop in a community in which there are no other Jews. They feel vulnerable. They're concerned. Who knows? You know, one day I'm sitting there and in my house, minding my own business. I'm out on the front step, whatever I'm doing. And the neighbors decide, we don't like this Jew who's living among us. They attack us. They lynch us. They do whatever they do. And we're vulnerable. We have nobody to protect us. They're not going to be afraid of attacking us. And therefore, if I'm going to move into a community, if I'm going to move into a house around the yard, I'm going to make sure there's another Jewish resident. It is unlikely that a Jew is going to move into a house on a yard all by himself. That's Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov's position. Therefore, the position of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is, in the event that you have one Jew living among non-Jews around the yard, there's no decree to be made of, well, he might learn from them. Because we don't make decrees for unusual cases. However, once there are multiple Jews, they feel comfortable living in that space. Now we're concerned. They're going to learn from the neighbors. And therefore, in order to make things difficult for them, for the Jews, in order to discourage them from staying in that circumstance, we're going to say, your Erev Chatzeros doesn't work. Every Shabbos, you're going to be stuck. You won't have an Erev Chatzeros. And this will be a disincentive for you to live in those types of circumstances. Anytime you see Jews around the yard with non-Jewish neighbors as well, you're going to know they can't carry, even in this enclosed yard, they can't carry house into yard, yard back into house. It's a way to discourage interaction. That's Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov's explanation. Now, Rabbi Meir says, I hate to tell you this, but you will find lone Jews living around the yard as well. Rabbi Meir summer is imminent to Mikri Vidayer. Rabbi Meir says, no, sometimes Jews will live in such circumstances, and therefore the decree applies whether there is only one Jew around the yard or there are multiple Jews around the yard. That's the Gemara in Erev and Samp Bezim et Aleph. Are we clear on that?
Just Rabbi Meir's normal chayshu.
That's interesting. I haven't seen anybody frame it that way. It's true. Meir is always more concerned about minority than others. You saw someone.
I don't know if it was in the Rishonim, but yeah, some of them say, yeah, it's just Rabbi Meir. It's chayshu miyuta.
But chayshu miyuta isn't an issue regarding shchiach and gezeros.
No, it's just it's the same type of idea that he basically, he takes things that happen not so often seriously.
Right. Could be. Could be. It's an interesting idea for sure. So that's the idea is Erev Chatzeros itself, if you had a yard with Jews and non-Jews, Jews make the Erev Chatzeros and they can all transport. However, we have an added decree that says we are going to disqualify an Erev Chatzeros if there are Jews and non-Jews living on the yard because we don't want Jews to remain there. That's the idea. The non-Jews residents will count to prohibit transport. Yeah, who said that?
No, it's Tosos.
Tosos actually says it? Okay, yeah. I didn't notice.
Or the Pidon on the hold of the Chai from Erlita. It was like...
Okay, good. Then there you go. There's your answer. Okay.
So according to the mission, even one...
Yes, swallow the Tosos.
Sorry?
Even one Nochri in a Chotzer of 20...
It will wreck it for all of them. It doesn't matter how many non-Jews are present or what percentage of the mix.
So he's going to learn from that...
Yeah, the Jew is going to learn potentially from this the individual non-Jewish neighbor. That's correct. I understand the question, but that's the answer. So that what ends up happening is, you're stuck. Now, does that mean you're really stuck? Because that would create huge problems, right? We have an Erev Chatzeros in Toronto. Without this Erev Chatzeros, this whole big vaunted Erev that we have, the Toronto Erev, doesn't work. Without an Erev Chatzeros meal that's merging our properties. There are an awful lot of non-Jews living in Toronto. So how does your Erev Chatzeros work if you have Jews and non-Jews? So the answer is in source Dalet. Va'amar Rabbanan. In addition to this, the Rabbanan said, Ein Erev Mol v'makom Nachri, Erev Chatzeros isn't going to do any good if you have non-Jewish residents. Ve'ein Bitul Rishus Mol v'makom Nachri. Not only that, saying, well, let him just be Mevadel his Rishus. Let him say, all right, I view it as though I'm not a resident. I suspend my residency. That doesn't work either. It does exist among Jews, the possibility of Bitul Rishus, but this doesn't work for these purposes. Ad Sheyaskir, you know what you have to do? You have to rent the non-Jews' access to the property. And the Gemara says, good luck. The Nachri lo mogir. The non-Jew has no interest whatsoever in renting out access, to the property. My taima, why is it that he won't do it? The words in brackets are my addition. Why is it that he won't rent it out? If you're going to tell me he doesn't want to rent it out because he's worried that you're going to claim his house, right? It's like a, what's the word? When you have a notorious and adverse use of somebody's property for a while, right? What's an easement is one that you've made an arrangement for. There's another term. Sorry? I mean, what results is an easement, effectively? If my property line ends here, and his property line, presumably is the same spot, however, for 10 years, I have been using the space on the edge of his property, then eventually I'm able to say, if he knew about it, and it was the type of use that he wouldn't allow unless it was really mine, it's what we call chazaka in halacha. Then now it's mine. So maybe he's concerned. He doesn't want to rent out access to his property for Shabbos because he's worried that I'm actually going to take him to court. I'm going to claim this is now my property. Well, hani chalaman damar schiris bria ba'inon. That's only true if the type of rental I'm doing is a robust rental. And what that means exactly, Rabbi Zeri is going to cover in Shir, I hope, next week, what a robust rental looks like. But do I leave property in his house, and so on. El amandam reskiris re'ua ba'inan ma'igal amemra. But if it's really only a paper rental anyway, just to satisfy the fact that we require rental of his property, if it's not a big deal, then why should he be concerned? To which the Gemara answers, afilu hachi, even still, chashish nachri l'kshafim v'lo mogir. He looks at these Jews, who are asking to rent out his house, who are giving him some mumbo-jumbo about being able to carry into the yard. And you know what he thinks? He thinks, last Pesach, I saw those Jews. They went around their house with a candle, right? With a lamp, at night, searching for things around their house. They carry branches. They do all sorts of very strange things. Looks like witchcraft and voodoo. To me, they want to rent out my house? Absolutely not. There is no way in the world that I am going to allow that to happen. And therefore, he won't rent it out. So in other words, what they did was, they created a rule saying, if you have co-residency around a yard with non-Jews, we aren't happy, and therefore, we're not going to let you carry into your yard. You want to carry into your yard? Okay, we'll give you a way out. You can rent out his house. Good luck. Watch him allow you to rent out his house. That's the idea. Clear? Okay. Now, the truth of the matter is that there is one other place in Shas where they have a similar idea, an enactment which is meant to prevent Jews from learning from the actions of non-Jews. And it's a very important point, because there are three arguments that are made for leniency in this regard, regarding Shema Yilmod, and they all surround this other Gemara. None of these arguments ends up being taken seriously as something to play with in Halacha, except in a case of great need, but it's important to know them. So you need to see the Gemara above Metziah in Aleph, which I brought you in Source Hay. They quote you a pasuk in Mishlei. If somebody increases his wealth by charging interest, he really is only gathering it for the sake of the one who helps the needy. In other words, a person who amasses wealth by lending money to others and charging interest isn't actually going to profit from it himself. He's going to end up turning it over to the poor. So the Gemara says, "Mylafonin dalim." What does that mean? He's collecting it for the one who helps the needy. Who's that? So Amar Rab, go and Shabur Malka. Rab says what it means is the Persian prince. This is not Shabur Malka, the nickname for Shmuel. This is the real Shabur Malka, the Persian prince. He's going to collect it all in taxes. You think that you're making money. He's going to take it all away from you in taxes, and he will then turn around and give it to the needy. So don't think that you're making money this way by lending money and charging interest. Amar of Nachman. Rav Nachman says, Amar li huna lo nitzracha ela dafilu rivis denachri. Rav Nachman says, you know what Rav Huna told me? This idea is not just where a person lends money for interest in a forbidden way, right? Where he lends it to Jews where he's not supposed to, but even in a permissible way, because the Torah says that you're not allowed to lend money for interest to Jews as a special protection for your family, even though lending money without charging interest is suicidal from an economic perspective, right? Because what's your best case scenario? Your best case scenario is that you lost opportunity cost and inflation, and you made your money back on time. That's your best case scenario. If the guy defaults, or drags out, or you have to take him to Beit Din to get paid back, you end up losing. The only way in the world that you're going to come out whole from lending money is going to be if you charge interest. So the Torah says, that's true, but for family, we view lending as tzedakah. Lending is, and it's expressed that way in the Chumash, lending is an act of tzedakah, so don't charge interest. The greater world? Okay, fine, so you'll make it back. And Rav Nachman says, I have news for you. The pasuk that says, if you make money on interest, you're going to end up giving it away anyway. That's actually talking about when you did it permissively for non-Jews. To which the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Esve, we learned, Lovin Mehen, Umalvin Osim Beribis, V'chei Meker Toshav. Don't you know, we've learned, that there is absolutely nothing wrong with lending money to and borrowing money from non-Jews with interest. Even if he keeps the Noachai laws and everything. So Amrav Chia Breit Rav Huna, Rav Chia Breit Rav Huna explains, Lo Nitzrecha Ela Bechdei Chayav. He says, the heter is only for the sake of your livelihood. Where you need it for the sake of survival, then you're allowed to do it. We don't want you doing it in general. Ravina Ama, Ravina gives a different answer, and it's the important one for our purposes. He says, Hacha betamide chachamim askinan. He says, you want to know when we permit you to lend money to them on interest? If you're a tamachacham, if you are learned, then you are allowed to lend them money and charge interest. But not anybody else. Time of my goes to Ravana. Why the Ravana make this decree? Shema yilmod mi ma'asav. Lest you, or maybe it's time of my goes to Ravana. Either way. Shema yilmod mi ma'asav. The concern is that if you're going to lend him money on interest, you know what you're going to do? You're going to then go after him to get paid back. You're going to hang out where he hangs out. You need to be able to find him. And the result is you're going to learn from his deeds through these interactions. But if you're a Talmud Chacham, so we're not concerned that you're going to learn from him. That's the Gemara above Mitzia. So it's a separate rabbinic decree of don't lend money to non-Jews and charge interest because you might come to learn from him. You follow? We have a heter, we have a leniency when it comes to a Talmud Chacham, and that's brought the halacha in the Rambam Hilchos Malva Veloba Perkei Halacha Beis and in Shulchan Aruch in Yerodei Kuf Nun Tes.
So it seems to be dancing around the current Yerushalmi about creating arbas to create bonds between the Yidden and the Chassidus issues of the world and interest in avoid Goyim and so on. It seems to be dancing around the same thing, that you're trying to promote healthy activity between Jews and discourage unhealthy activity.
I don't think it's dancing around it. I think it's speaking to it directly.
So it all seems to be
part of the same theme.
In contradistinction to the reason given by the Babli, which seems to be...
Oh, that's what you mean.
I'm saying the theme seems to be diverging and going along the line of the Yerushalmi's reasoning.
That it, or
it started with the Nehru.
I hear what you're saying, but I don't think so. No, but I hear what you're saying, but I don't think so. The reason I don't think so, going back into the Erev Chatzeros, is because what they were doing was fundamentally not about saying, well, Erev Chatzeros will help you to get along with them. Rather, what they're saying is Erev Chatzeros will enable you to live in the yard.
Right.
And living in the yard is what will cause you to learn from them.
Right.
The added step. So the questions that you have to ask based on this Gemara Bava Mitzia are threefold. First of all, since you have a heter to lend them money for Rivis, if you're a Talmud Chacham, maybe you should be able to do an Erev Chatzeros, if you're a Talmud Chacham. Right? Because you are not concerned that you're going to learn from him. So the Nachlat Tzvi says, you have to reread that. Nachlat Tzvi is on the daf in Shulchan Aruch, in the standard Shulchan Aruch. Take a look at source above. He says, Shuv ra'isi de barambam hechaz malda perakei halacha beis kasev atam degavei tamar chacham lo gazu mishum she'eno ragil etzlo ve'eno lo meid mimasav. He says, the point of the tamar chacham is not he's insulated against learning from them because he's a tamar chacham and therefore we're not worried about him. We're just as worried for the tamar chacham as we're worried for everybody else. Except that, eino ragil etzlo. If he's a guy who sits and learns, so he's not going to be out in the mall with them. He's not going to go to the bar with them because that's not where he hangs out. He hangs out in the base medrash. They know lomay mimasav. He doesn't learn from them. That's what the Rambam's language is in Hachos Mava Velova. The MK nicha b'pshitas to came into darimo haray ragil atzlo. So therefore, it's not going to work when it comes to our discussion about Erev Chatzeros. You're living in the same yard. You're absolutely with him. You come home, he's there. You leave for work, he's there. You come home and eat a meal, he's there. At Shabbos all day, he's there. Of course you're with him. So it's not about being a Talmud Chacham. It's about whether you will be in proximity to the non-Jewish neighbor. That's the concern that we have, and that you can't get around by saying, well, I'm a Talmud Chacham. It doesn't matter, you're still home at some point. Hopefully. So that's the... That's number one. Yeah?
That is a very interesting conclusion, though, to say that, because the Gemara is replete with examples of Talmud Chacham who had businesses and they totally function within the non-Jewish community.
And that's coming next. That's coming next. The second argument that is brought comes from the Shulchan Aruch language in the Ribbis discussion. Take a look at Sor Zion. The Shulchan Aruch writes, Devar Torah, biblically, Mutar Lahavos Lavek Chachamim Beribbis. Biblically, sure, you can lend to them with interest. V'chachamim Asaruhu, the Chachamim prohibited it, Imlo Kidei Chayav, unless it is because you need it for survival, O L'tamal Chacham, or for Tamal Chacham, O Beribbis Dirabbanan, that's a third hectare, if the Ribbis that you're talking about is not biblically defined as interest. V'ha'idna Mutar, added words, B'chol Inyan. Today, it's entirely permissible. You're allowed to lend to him. You don't have to be a Tamach Chacham, doesn't have to be a Kidei Chayav. We're good. So writes the Shulchan Aruch, today things are different. Why are things different? So you have to look back in the tour, which I brought you in Ches. Today we permit it for everybody. By the way, they ask, the commentators on this, the Kalim ask, so why am I allowed to borrow from them on interest if you don't want me to lend to them? And they make a distinction. Because when you borrow from somebody on interest, the first thing you do is run away. You don't want to be you don't want to be around until you have the ability to repay him. We're not concerned you're going to hang out with him. It's the lender who goes looking for the borrower, not the other way around. So that's why there's less of a concern. But in any case, the Torah writes, he says, the reason why we permit it today is because the decree is unenforceable. We can't make money. You won't be able to feed your family if you're going to make decrees that say don't engage in commerce with them. So he says, you're already in his store. You're already selling him goods. You're buying his goods and taking them somewhere else to sell to another non-Jew. So we're going to say this micro area of business is going to be off limits. That's going to change the equation. You know, we prohibited you from lending him money for interest. However, you're going to go sell him merchandise. You're going to start a warehouse and you're going to store his stuff for him. It's a joke. The decree has no meaning. That's the position taken by the tour. And so the argument is, well, today, we have no option other than living in areas that have Jews and non-Jews, right? Unless you are living in a ghetto world. And by ghetto world, I mean like the old European ghetto. I'm not talking about Thornhill. They are Bathurst Lawrence. You know, just like you can't engage in commerce without them, you also can't, you know, live without living in their yard. And in fact, the Sefer Das Torah on our Chaim Shin Pei Beis, as Rav Shradron, makes the argument. I brought you the link to where you can find it on Otzer Chachma, because I wasn't going to sit there and retype all his text. But he brings you a number of Achronim who make that argument.
I cut out PDFs of all the Shibboleth that said it and put it one page.
Oh, you did? Okay.
The
Maram Shik asks as well. He says, why do we distinguish? I did bring you the Maram Shik in Source Yud. He says, He says, I don't understand this whole rental thing about, hey, don't learn from them. As found in Erev and Samach Beis. And he says, you find it with Ribbis, and with Ribbis, the poskim write, as we saw in the Torah in Shulchan Aruch, I'm just paraphrasing what he says in Source Yud. He says, and there's no concern about you're going to learn from him because, well, you need to engage in commerce. He says, I hate to tell you, the same thing is true in our situation. And he says, Sarachiyu Machalik. He says, yeah, I don't really see a distinction. And he leaves it as Sarachiyu. So that's the second argument that is made. This whole discussion about Erev Chatzeros and non-Jews maybe should be moot today.
Of course, Rochelle Berlin.
Then there's a...
From the
Rush. The third element is a very remarkable idea for leniency. It's from the Beis Meir. The language of Rashi in Erev and Samach Beis, which I didn't actually bring you at this point in the sheet, but we'll see later in... I don't see where I have it on the sheet. I have it as a Rashi later. There it is. If you see, jump down to Chavav on the sheet. It's Rashi from Samach Beis Amad Aleph. He says, regarding this requirement of renting from the non-Jew, the Chachamim burdened and caused a loss for the Jew who dwells there, so that he's going to have to rent it out for every Shabbos, and eventually he'll just leave. He'll get fed up and say, you know what, I've had enough of this, I'm moving. I'm going to move that source up here also, because it's... good to know for this one. That's the goal, is that the Jew gets fed up. That's what you're trying to accomplish, is to get him to leave. Well, the base mayor says, in that case, what about where a Jew doesn't have the option of leaving? I didn't bring you the actual base mayor on the sheet. I brought you the Shevet Alevi's quote of the base mayor in the source, which you will have as Yud Aleph. It's now Yud Beis. He says the base mayor argues, if the whole point is you want to get the Jew to get out of Dodge, in that case, what if it's a boat? He needs to get from point A to point B. He's going to have to travel over Shabbos. And you're telling him now he can't have an Erev Chatzeros on the boat because there are non-Jews on the boat as well. He doesn't have another option. There isn't a Jew-only boat that's making this trip such that he could, you know, do it that way. And then, applying it further, we don't have the option of moving to places that are Jewish-only yards. So the argument of the base mayor is that today, this isn't relevant, the Gzera isn't relevant for that reason. The Shevet HaLevi is very uncomfortable, Rav Wasner, and he quotes it for, you know, Sha'as HaDchag Gadol. If a person is in real trouble and doesn't have an Eruv, then, you know, because there's a non-Jew and he couldn't rent it from him and so on, maybe there's something that you could work with there. But, yeah.
On the boat, you can go back to the issue of hotels.
Right, the question of who owns the boat and access to the roof. He deals with the boat without working with that. But yes, that would be a hypothetical possibility. So what we've said is that we have this gzera of Erev Chatzeros. We want you to make an Erev Chatzeros. We don't want you living among the Nachrim lest you become like them. And therefore, we say that if there's a non-Jew present in the yard, you can't make an Erev Chatzeros unless you bring the head of a dragon. No, unless you rent out the property from him. That's what you're going to need to do in order to be able to live there. Now, what's interesting to me is that we actually have two different assumptions at work in this heder, right? Or in this Isser and heder. We have the assumption of you're going to learn from him. And we also have the assumption, which we haven't discussed much since we first stated it, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, who says that Jews tend not to live as one Jew in a yard with many non-Jews. That's not the normal way that Jews will live. And so my question is, what about in situations where it's clear to us that you won't learn from him? We mentioned the Talmud Chacham possibility, whether that's a factor, but I'm going to give you another one momentarily. What if there's no concern that you're going to learn from him? Is it still an issue? Or what if it is common for Jews to live in a certain way, even though we think that it's not? And I'll explain what I mean in cases like in a moment. How does that shape the gezera? How does that shape this whole disqualification of the yard with the non-Jew? So in terms of Shema Yilmod, the concern that you might learn from him, that really does seem to shape the gezera, despite the fact that we didn't give you the Talmud Chacham exclusion. Nonetheless, the gzera does not apply where there is no Shema Yilmod concern. And I base that on Samach Beis Amud Beis, which is brought la halacha in Shulchan Aruch and Shin Pei Gimel Aleph. Take a look on your sheet at source. You have it as Yud Beis. I now have it as Yud Gimel. Omar Mar. They quote the statement that the non-Jew's residence does not count as a residence as far as requiring participation in Erev Chatzeros. The Gemara says, but I have a Mishnah that says if you live with him, he prohibits. How can you tell me his residence doesn't count? I don't need his participation in Erev Chatzeros. And then tell me on the other hand, it prohibits. Two different sources. One source says he doesn't count. One source says he does count. So the Gemara answers, lo kasha, that's no problem. Had the isay, had the lesay. It depends on whether the non-Jew is around for Shabbos. We discussed this in an earlier shiur that I gave when we talked about the question of what if he's away for Shabbos, he comes back on Shabbos, don't have to be concerned he's going to return. What the Gemara right here says is, if the non-Jew is not present, he went out of town. All the non-Jewish residents had a Shabbaton somewhere. In such a case, I'm fine. Then we say his chatzir doesn't count. Umay kasavar, what's the logic? I kasavar dira below by shmadira filanachinami ditzer. I don't understand. If you believe that a residence without people living there, it's vacant, counts, then his residence should still disqualify us. Vikasavar dira below by lo shmadira, and if you're going to tell me that when it's vacant it doesn't count, then why do you only mention the non-Jew's residence? The same thing would be true for a Jew. You could tell me the lesson that if the Jew is away for Shabbos, he doesn't have to participate in the Erev Chatzeros. Why do you mention the non-Jew? And his answer is, La'olam kasavar dira below b'ilam lo shma dira. The truth of the matter is, a vacant house doesn't count. Jewish owned, non-Jewish owned makes no difference. However, in the Jewish case, if he were present, he would prohibit for you. Even when he's absent, we still require his participation in the Erev Chatzeros. Nachri, but a non-Jew, when he's present, he really doesn't count anyway. The only reason he counts is because we're concerned you're going to learn from him. Well, if he's not here, you're not going to learn from him. And therefore, lo asar, there's no prohibition. So what the Gemara does is it says, we're flexible. Where you might learn from him, this is a concern. Where you might not, where you aren't going to learn from him, this is not a concern. Yes?
The reasons to include the Yid, whether it's the Bavi Yid or Shami, are only totally if he's there. And also, if the Yid is there, you have the concern of the Bavi that people might mistake and carry it to Rosh Hashanah. If he's not there, he's not going to learn that. According to the Yerushalmi, you want to promote Arvus. If he's not there, he's not going to have Arvus. So the same reasoning holds.
Right, and it's only the only reason for it is just Gzera.
Right, so if you want to say that with the Nachri, it's Bakal Tam, Bakal Takana, because he's not there, you don't have a problem, then you should say the same thing by the Yid.
No, because by the what we're saying is, fundamentally, your residence does count. A vacant residence is a concern.
But it's not the Yid's residence that actually is the impediment. It's his presence in the residence that actually is the problem.
I'm sorry, we're saying a residence does not count. Take it back. We're saying a residence is loshma dira, the residence does not count. So, for the Jew, right, we are saying doesn't matter. The residence doesn't count, but we're goes there anyway. We want his participation. Erev Chatzeros is incumbent upon him anyway. This is the craziest set of gzera, l'gzera, l'gzera. I mean, they're not really gzera, l'gzera, because it's all one gzera. This is how he used Judah Erev Chatzeros. But when you think about what we've accomplished here, this was entirely mutter as far as the Torah was concerned. And now we've created an Erev Chatzeros, which we're going to apply, even if you're not there, you know, with all these layers down.
But it's also...
I'm still confused on this whole thing, right? I mean, we talked about this, what the Gemara means. It says there's a gzera. The gzera doesn't apply, but it does, right? Which makes sense when you're talking deraisas, derabanans.
Yeah.
Either it assumes a historical development,
or
it assumes a, you know,
monolithic
theoretical, or like a theoretical, right?
Yeah.
Like we set up one gzera, but we set it up at multiple levels.
Correct.
This is the ikra gzera. This is the secondary gzera.
But to go back to Pesach before we end up wrapping up. But the with the non-Jew, right, where the we are concerned shema yilmod mimasav, that's a sub element of the broader Erev Chatzeros discussion. In other words, for the Jew, it's a function of the broader Erev Chatzeros thing, and we're going to say Erev Chatzeros will apply. He's there, he's not there. For the non-Jew, Erev Chatzeros doesn't apply. There is no such thing as Erev Chatzeros for a non-Jew. Lo shmei dira. The only thing that does exist is, really, what this really is, I suppose, and this is a very interesting way to think about it, I want to think about this more conceptually, but really what we're saying is that there are two different things that act the same. That's really what this is. Erev Chatzeros is a shem mushal, effectively. What we're saying is, when it comes to Jewish residents, we require Erev Chatzeros, whether because we want to create peace among people or whether it's because we don't want you to get confused about Rosh Hashanah Rabbin, right? That's Erev Chatzeros for Jewish residents. It has no relevance for the non-Jewish residents. Their dira is not a dira as far as we are concerned for this halacha. This institution is an institution made incumbent upon Jews. Separately, if there are non-Jewish residents in the yard, we are saying we don't want you to learn from them, and therefore we're going to disqualify your Jewish Erev Chatzeros. Right? They're two completely different things.
We just patched
it up. Exactly. That's what we've done, and therefore, where the Band-Aid has no reason to exist because he's not living there, we're good. We don't need to.
That would be a
Luxera, yes. But that's the idea. So what we'll have to do starting next time is to talk about the exceptions to the Xera in terms of Shrichi, the diary, cases where he, even though we said one Jew normally will not live among a population of non-Jews, nonetheless, there will be some differentiations to make, such as the case of the Jew in the inner yard and the Jew in the outer yard, and the non-Jew is in the outer yard, and Tfisas Yad issues a little bit, and the Jew of the Ma'aril. We'll have to have some discussions about that. So God willing, that will be on Friday. Shir is at 11:30. I'm sorry, 10:30. Shir ends at 11:30. Of course. Right. 10:30. Okay. Shkaya.